internationally renowned performance and installation artist, James Luna. Luna's works transform gallery spaces in battlefields where the audience is confronted with the nature of cultural identity, the tensions generated by cultural isolation, and the dangers of cultural misinterpretations, all from an indigenous perspective. After these announcements, we'll hear flashpoints.
Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Youth Summit, taking place February 12th and February 13th at the Blazers Boys and Girls Club in Portland. February 12th will feature a workshop called Healing Ourselves to Raise Our Future and a performance by spoken word artist S. Renee Mitchell. February 13th will feature workshops on topics ranging from becoming an MC to healthy living to information on going to Africa. That evening, the summit will close with a youth talent showcase. Again, that's the Portland Youth Summit, February 12th and 13th at the Blazers Boys and Girls Club, 5250 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at cabo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 33rd Real Music Film Festival running through February 8th. Tuesday, February 2nd will be They Will Have to Kill Us First. When jihadists took control of northern Mali in 2012, they imposed one of the strictest interpretations of Sharia law in history. Music was banned, radio stations were destroyed, instruments were burned, and musicians faced torture or even death. In a country celebrated for its vibrant musical tradition, the most revered members of society, musicians, were forced into hiding or exile. This film follows Mali's musicians as they fight to keep music alive in their country. That's February 2nd at 7 p.m. at the Northwest Film Center in the Witzel Auditorium at 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information on the films and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Flashpoints: widespread protests continue in Haiti as a result of fraudulent U.S.-sponsored elections. Also, we'll hear from Harvey Wasserman about a six-point plan to prevent the next presidential election from being stolen electronically. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Well, we return to Haiti. Joining us in the studio is our special correspondent, our senior correspondent, who has been covering Haiti forever for this show, a filmmaker, Kevin Pina. Welcome back to Flashpoints.
Hey, thanks, Dennis.
It's good to have you with us. Last we left this, there was violence and more violence and a sort of a crack squad of police slash death squads going around the streets and attacking people who are simply fed up with the election steal. You can set the scene.
Taking protesters into secret rooms and torturing them. Right. Beating them with metal, forcing them to pull their pants down and then beating their buttocks with metal cables. Just really horrendous stuff. Kicking them. The photographs of these people afterwards, we finally got those photographs and identified them. And it's just horrific the way they were treated, bloodied, just terribly bloodied.
And we actually witnessed, which we put up on our website last week, a murder on camera.
That's right. That link should still be on there. And by the way, while we're talking about this, if people want to just search the Twitter, if you're next to your computer and you want to search our Twitter timeline, it's at Haiti InfoProj, at HAITIINFOPROJ. And you'll see the timeline over the last 3 days has just been amazing. We've been in touch on the ground with these demonstrators and these protests every day for the last week, actually. As they've unfolded, they all began usually in Saint Jean Bosco, which is Aristide's former parish. Remember, that was attacked and burned down by the military. People slaughtered there in 1987. It's become a symbol of resistance, of course, for...
Yeah, we interviewed a number of the survivors. I was in Haiti to do that.
That's right. So it's a symbol of resistance to this very day in the neighborhood of La Saline. And so if you go to that Twitter timeline, you'll see that each one of these demonstrations opens up with a ceremony.
Yes.
Where they draw a veve on the line, which is sort of a voodoo ceremony. These last two have been dedicated to the veve of Kafu, which is the crossroads, the change. From there, they put a bonfire on top of it to carry the wishes to their ancestors, which is really the message, nous pap obéi, we will not obey, which is really the answer of the slave to the master. And this, of course, comes from a very famous speech that Aristide gave this last September the 30th of last year, in which he said several times, we will not accept the colonial mentality of the masters, nous pap obéi, we will not obey. And so that's really become the cry now of these demonstrations, and they're asking for four really clear demands.
And run it back so people understand who were just coming in. There were presidential elections. You called
this,
Kevin.
There were legislative elections first, August the 9th.
And then there were presidential elections.
October 25th, right.
Which you called as absolutely fraudulent and laid out essentially why they were fraudulent.
That day.
All hell has broken loose. Because the U.S. government has tried to support the Haitian government in sustaining these fraudulent elections.
Well, let's start with August the 9th, the legislative elections. It begins with violence, which is then transmitted over radio stations throughout the country, which, of course, creates this climate where people are questioning whether they should go to the polls or not. Then the reports trickle in of killings, of burning of polling stations. Now, most of this later, of course, is seen to be by several parties which are aligned with Michel Martelly, the current president, and his PHTK party. Probably most prominent among them were a party called Bouclier, which is actually run by his wife, the first lady, and by Yuri Latourtière, party called AAA. Yuri Latourtière, of course, is the presumed murderer of Father Jean-Marie Vincent. He's been called the trigger man by several eyewitnesses. The UN has suppressed those interviews. I've released copies of them on the internet where eyewitnesses have said that Yuri Latourtière, who's a real close advisor to the current president, actually killed Father Jean-Marie Vincent in 1994 in front of his parish. Now, the real symbol of the bankruptcy and the corruption of these elections has to be Guy Philippe. Guy Philippe was an Ecuador-trained police officer who was the chief of police of Port-au-Prince. He later, of course, is famous for having been in the Dominican Republic, having received brand new M16s. Remember, we reported on that here. This was in 2003, 2004, began making armed incursions into Haiti, ultimately leading to an invasion of Haiti when the so-called democratic opposition to Aristide disappeared into nothing. Then in comes Guy Philippe with paramilitary forces rolling across the border, starts attacking police stations, killing police officers, and killing Haitians who support Lavalas and Aristide. Well, Guy Philippe ran in those elections and won and is going to the first round. Now, anybody who goes and puts in the name Guy Philippe, P-H-I-L-L-I-P-E, and you do comma D-E-A, you will see that Guy Philippe is currently wanted by the Drug Enforcement Agency
of the U.S.
of the United States government. He was indicted by a Miami grand jury. And now the question is, I don't know if people remember this, but Michel Martelly worked with the Drug Enforcement Agency to set up President Maduro of Venezuela's two godnephews, right? Godsons of his wife. They were taken and picked up by the DEA, entrapped by Martelly's people, picked up by the DEA and flown out to the United States. Now, if the DEA and Michel Martelly can work so hard to entrap two of Maduro, President Maduro's godsons, I believe they're godsons, in Haiti, then why can't they Why can't they arrest Guy Philippe? And now Guy Philippe came out this week and said that he's going to create a civil war in the country, that he's going to intervene militarily if he needs to. So what it says is, the United States has not stopped using paramilitary proxies in Haiti to shake up the board, because if they did, they could easily have arrested Guy Philippe, but they've kept him in reserve. They were trying to protect him. Michel Martelly was trying to protect him by allowing him to run for the Senate. He won the first round. Now, if he gets elected, he is immune from prosecution and the U.S. cannot extradite him. And wow. This is what's going on in Haiti today. And he's a symbol for Haitians of drug dealers who are being pushed as Democrats by Michel Martelly on the Haitian people in order to protect them and to keep U.S. assets protected, because when the so-called, you know, peaceful movement of the right doesn't succeed, it's always people and assets like Guy Philippe who come in and threaten to upset the board with guns.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. This story has echoes because I'm thinking about how it was that the CIA created the anti-drug forces.
And they also created SIN.
SIN, the anti-drug forces, and FRAP.
And FRAP.
Which both became
the Front for Advancement and Progress in Haiti.
I do remember back then that actually it was the SIN created by the CIA that actually ran, death-threatened the DEA out of Haiti.
That's right.
And the CIA said nothing because the CIA wanted this so-called anti-drug operation to be a terrorist organization.
It was their asset.
It's unbelievable.
And it's still going on today. And it's part of, it's what many Haitians see as one of the central points of corruption when it comes to Martelly and how he's set the deck on August the 9th. It was to elect and protect those henchmen and those people who protect his government. These are strongmen and thugs who he's presented to run for parliament. And they won because they cheated and they committed fraud at the ballot and they did everything they could to terrorize the population, to keep the voter turnout low on August the 9th. So that's the parliamentary elections.
With tremendous U.S. support.
No. There's been no objection by the United States filed against any of this. And quite the contrary. The United States has made emphatic
in
saying that these elections need to happen regardless. They say there are a few irregularities and there's technical problems. The Haitians are saying, look, it's massive fraud. And they're saying there's no massive fraud. You know, as Peter Mulreen, the U.S. ambassador's nose grows, and he tries to explain to the Haitian press, there's no massive fraud. People basically see him as a laughingstock. They see him as lying. They see U.S. foreign policy as supporting and propping up Michel Martelly and fraudulent elections against the popular will of the electorate in Haiti. Then, of course, we go to October the 25th.
And presidential elections.
The first round of the presidential elections. And there we can see a very different but similar sorts of tactics, except this time the tactic is not really about low voter turnout because people show up to vote. It's about turning them away from the polls and then trying to replace their votes with who you want to vote for. That's what they did during the first presidential round. They were caught red-handed, turning away legitimate voters and then voting for them. And that's why you had 30% of the ballots that were sampled when they went in and they did an investigation. There were 30% of the ballots that had false IDs attached to them, and 46% of them had no ID at all attached to them. Yet those people supposedly were counted off on the rolls as having voted. And many of them showed up to vote and were turned away because their names did not appear inside of the polling station. So it was really a bait and switch kind of operation. Of course, there was violence that committed, but you know, the big line is that there was low voter turnout. And I say that suppressing the vote and not allowing people to vote is not the same thing as low voter turnout. And most of those votes, most people concede, would have most likely gone to favor Lavalas and their presidential candidate, Maurice Narcisse.
We made some connection. We've been trying because it's a tough road to get through. So who do we have now?
We have a good friend, Ivan Kenisan. He's been one of the main contacts in the ground. He's been in every demonstration. He's got a lot to say. Let's bring John on right away.
All right. Welcome, Ivan. Welcome.
Thank you. I was listening to your little discussion, and frankly, I don't think I could have said it better myself.
Oh, yes, you can. And give us you're there. You know, paint us a picture on the ground, please.
This is one thing about the people of Haiti. It is our residence. They are determined not to let it go. They are determined not to let the most powerful country in the world dictate what to happen in Haiti. And it's a tough situation. It is a very hard situation. Kevin saw how we organize, how we finance what's happening in the streets. And it is the people themselves putting whatever little money they have to conduct those demonstrations.
I was just going to say, it's important to make that point because there are a couple, I hate to say this, but right-wing evangelists, U.S. expatriate evangelists, who are very closely associated with Marta Lee, who are now doing propaganda for him on the web and social media. And one of their big points is that these are all paid demonstrators. And you're absolutely right. You know, we've seen that thousands of Haitians who are demonstrating for democracy will come and put their pennies together in the streets to buy themselves a meal, to buy water for those demonstrations. I'm sorry, Yvonne, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Exactly. Yes, and yesterday I had a situation when one guy is going to pass out because he hasn't had anything to eat for 2 days, and yet he was there demonstrating. Thank God there was a group of us, and we managed to get something to get him something to eat. And I strongly recommended that he went home, and he told me, no way. He told me that when Dessalines, Christophe Petro, and all of these guys who gave us that piece of land,
the heroes of the revolution,
the situation was a lot worse for them. And, you know, he wasn't about to go back home while we were out there fighting for his children and grandchildren. So that's how strongly he felt about it. So it's really, really... I tell you one thing. I myself, I am overwhelmed for the resilience. I mean, the Haitians, they are so resilient. They will not let it go. And this is where I got my strength.